Well, is it working? Yesterday, we heard about the creation, the 10 different levels of creation, and how Lord Brahma was inspired by Krishna with the knowledge, with the ability to perform this creation because he had pleased Krishna, but yet he had to undergo austerities, further austerities and meditation. But by Krishna's potency and Krishna's pleasure, he was able to overcome the difficulties that were presented to him in the form of the devastating waters of creation and the devastating winds that were of destruction, rather, that were present before the creation was manifest. So we heard about that, and we heard how Brahma his part in the different creation, how the first six elements of creation, beginning with the creation of the Mahatattva, were all created by Krishna, and then the subsequent creations, 7, 8, 9, and 10, ending with the demigods, before that the human beings, before that the different varieties, 28 varieties of animals, and before that the non-moving living entities. All these were created by Brahma. Those are called the Visarga, or the secondary creations. Asun. So, in the midst of that chapter, the chapter we read yesterday when the creations were described, there was also information given about time. And the reason why this information was given about time and the forces of time and what is time and how is it measured, it itself is absolute, but it is measured, it is separate, it is independent, it is Krishna's energy, it is unstoppable. But it is measured in relationship to material things. Although it itself, practically speaking, is non-material, being Krishna's energy, it is measured in relationship to very finite things, such as things that are situated in space. So many examples will be given of this. So in that chapter, the question of Vidura that prompted Maitreya to describe about time was in the 10th verse. And he said to Maitreya, "O my Lord, O greatly learned sage, kindly describe eternal time," which is another form of the Supreme Lord. It's an energy of Krishna. What are the symptoms of that eternal time? How are we to understand the presence of time? Because one can't see time. When one looks at one's watch, we think, what time is it? But we're not actually seeing time. Time is more or less imperceptible, and we can only see it in relationship to something else, to something that is materially created. Because those things in the material world that are under the influence of time, they progress from creation to maintenance and finally to destruction and annihilation. So when we're talking about time, although we don't think of it in this way, when we're talking about time, what we're actually talking about is something progressing towards its destruction. How close or far from destruction is it now? We look at our watch. This day is more or less ended. And we're thinking today is the 13th, Friday the 13th, and it is ended, okay, and tomorrow will be another day. But that actually means that this body is one day closer to its being destroyed, annihilated, dissolved, basically, back into its elements that compose it. So we don't think of time in that way. We have a very casual view of time, but actually time is a force that is imperceptible other than as it deals or interacts or pushes material things from creation to maintenance for some time to destruction. And that's how we recognize the existence of time. But time itself is independent, it's Krishna's energy. So he also, Vidura asked about the symptoms of time, eternal time, and please describe them to us in detail. And then Maitreya Muni did describe something about time. It's an instrument of Krishna for the material creation. And then he describes the creation. But in this chapter, the 11th chapter, the next chapter, he immediately continues to describe details about time, how time is measured. Now, in the end of the chapter, it becomes clear the philosophical reason why this is important. Because, and I've already basically said it, is because we have such a casual view of time. And we think, how long is a long time? When you're a young child, when you want to do something right now, you want it right now, and your mother says you have to wait 10 minutes. Sometimes we get so angry and jump to the ground and kick our arms and legs and scream, no, I want it now. 15 minutes is so long. And now that as we get older, our sense of what is a long time and how we have to be patient, it increases. So when we ask ourselves now, what sort of a pretty long time? Sometimes 2 weeks feels like a long time. Sometimes 6 months feels like a long time. 10 years feels like a really, we can't even imagine what life is going to be like 10 years from now. What kind of shape our body is going to be in. You'll be 30, you'll be 60, and you'll be still 29 or something like that. It's wonderful. You should patent it, bottle it, and sell it. So Krishna is going, Maitreya Muni is going, is really making a point in this description of time. We hear that point. We're going to hear what long time is. Because now we're thinking of, I'm going to live another 30 years or 40 years. That's a long time. That, therefore, when we have a long stretch of time ahead of us, what's the difference if I waste an hour or 2 hours or a week or 2 weeks or even a year or two or even 3 or 4 or 10 years? So much time is left. But actually, time is so, moves so fast, increasingly so. I remember the first time I became aware of this when I was quite young. I remember time going excruciatingly slowly until I was 7. And then something happened when I was 8 and it started speeding up. I remember being very consciously aware of that. And now, boom, 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 the days, the years, it was just 1998, the beginning of 1998. So recently, and now the year is almost over. It goes so fast. So what is the relevance of this? When time is moving fast and we have very little time, we have to use it very carefully. And what is the proper use of that time? In obtaining something very, very temporary? If someone said to you, would you like to be a billionaire? Of course, everyone would say, yes, I'd like to be a billionaire. How about, would you like to be beautiful, so strong, yes, yes, yes. But how would you like to be a billionaire for an 18th of a second only? Or you could be so beautiful, but for a 10th of a second. Or you could be so, so attractive and famous and powerful, but for a 16th of a second only, or 2 seconds. Would that be worth anything? Practically speaking, no. Would you risk so many truly valuable things to gain such fleeting benefits? Practically, they don't even exist, they move so fast. Well, if we look at our life in the perspective of how fast things actually go, when we increase our perspective, if someone was taking a movie or a video of our life, and they sped it up really, really fast, and you'd see the first year of your life pass within 3 seconds, and the next year in 3 seconds. And then you'd be growing so fast and so fast, and then something that was so important to you, something, a day, some of you had a wonderful day and you had planned for it and it made you so happy, but it would pass just not even like that, a day. So if we saw our whole life like that, in the perspective of its insignificance, what is valuable? Our whole concept, when our concept of time changes, our concept of what is valuable and what is useless also changes. So therefore, it is said the Vaishnava sees, he values to be the king of heaven. He considers it like a phantasmagoria, something that practically doesn't exist. Why? It's because he sees its existence in relationship to eternal time. And therefore, it's a flicker only. So what is the value of such enjoyment? What is the problem with misery, even? We talk about it often in relationship to our happiness is temporary and therefore not try for material happiness, but also our misery is temporary, so fleeting. And yet we think it is, oh, we feel so sorry for ourselves, and we try to undergo so much difficulty to remove the misery. But if someone told you, you're going to suffer so heavily, but it'll only be for a 16th of a second. There's more or less no value, there's neither value in that or the enjoyment for a 16th of a second. Both are what? What's the right word? Irrelevant, insignificant. Who cares? So, to take up spiritual life and understand why spiritual life is so important and what its true value is, we have to have a very long concept of time, very true concept of what is valuable in time. So to help us with that concept, Maitreya Muni is going to explain something about time. And because time is that which orders space, material space, changes in time, and we see and measure time in relationship to space. So, there's details in here. So the first two verses of this chapter explain something called the Parama Anu. Parama Anu. Anu means small, and Parama means supreme. The supreme small. And roughly translated, Prabhupada translates that as an atom. The smallest unit of material, of existence of matter. Nowadays, we break the atom, we talk about breaking the atom into its component parts. When we were in the sixth grade and the eighth grade in school, we learned about there's an atom and it's sort of like a universe and there are electrons and protons and neutrons. But actually nowadays they say that the scientific theories have changed to quantum mechanics. And they say actually that none of that really exists and no, there's no such thing as atoms and electrons and neutrons. But in any case, the smallest unit of matter is called the Parama Anu, the supreme small. And when it is undifferentiated, as the second verse Prabhupada actually explains in his purport to the first verse, when these units are not combined, this is the undifferentiated kaivalya, or oneness, of material creation. And actually, this understanding is very much according to Einsteinian physics, in his theory of relativity, he speaks about the interchangeability between matter and energy. And also it's very close to, this understanding is very close to the Buddhistic understanding of nirvana, or the ultimate, their understanding of what the ultimate truth is. So this is also has a place in the Vaishnava philosophy, and it is the Brahman. Basically it is Brahman, and Prabhupada describes it like that in the indivisible particle of which the universe is composed. This, the atom is the Parama Anu is the minute subtle form of eternal time. So there is a relationship between eternal time and this form. There's another purport where it is described as well as and said to be basically Brahman. It's all pervading. This is the oneness of everything in matter. So atoms are the ultimate state of the manifest universe. When they stay in their own form without combining, without forming different bodies, because ultimately all these things and this as well, these are all composed of atoms, or the air is composed of atoms. We can't see it. Everything is composed of these Parama Anus. So when they're not combined, oh here it is, it's actually in a verse. When they stay in their own forms without forming different bodies, they are called the unlimited oneness. This is Kaivalyam Param Mahan. Kaivalya means the oneness, and Parama Mahan means the supreme great, because it's the supreme great because it is everything. So what could be greater than everything? By definition, everything is the greatest. So this is the supreme great oneness, the undifferentiated oneness of everything. Kaivalyam Mahat Parama Mahan. So there are certainly different bodies in physical forms, but the atoms, the Parama Anu themselves, form the complete manifestation. So this is the oneness of everything. Now, time is measured. Now, how do you build up your measurement of time? We talk about the greatest amount of time that we think in terms of in our common day thinking. Well, that's indefinite. That's not specific. But what is the greatest amount of time, especially nowadays as we approach the year 2000? Everyone thinks of, well, a millennium, right? A millennium is 1,000 years. So then, below that, there is 100 years, which is a century. And below that, there's what? A decade. And below a decade is a year, and below a year is a month. So each of the big ones are defined in relationship to the one directly smaller than it, we're up to months. A month is, say, 30 days, and 30 days, that's, you're up to days. So each one is defined in something smaller. And a day is what's below it. Oh, a month is 4 weeks in the Vedic times, or in a lunar calendar, it goes by the moon. But we talk more about the days, 30 days in a month, and a day is composed of what? Hours, 24 hours, and hours are composed of minutes, and minutes are composed of seconds. But what is a second composed of? And how do you define a second? So you have to start with a definition somewhere. You have to say, this is what this is, and then based on that, you build up. So the smallest calculation that is given upon which everything else, the smallest, the calculation of time, the chapter isn't called, the calculation of time, it has to begin with the smallest. And everything is built on that. And it's from the atom, or the Paramanu. So one can estimate time by measuring the movement of the atomic combination of bodies. Time is the potency of the Almighty Personality of Godhead, Hari, who controls all physical movement, although he is not visible in the physical world. So we see time's effect, or Krishna's effect. It is all powerful within this world, so it represents Krishna. And it is all powerful and everywhere present, the effect. And no one, it is invincible time. That means no one can stop it. This is Krishna. Now how are we going to measure this? So atomic time, sakala paramanu vai, is measured according to its covering a particular atomic space. So time, although it is not space, it is measured in relationship with space. So this point was actually made in the previous chapter. The time is independent, but it's understood and measured in relationship with something that exists in space. That time which covers the unmanifested aggregate of atoms is called the great time. Now what does that mean? Prabhupada explains it in the last line of the purport. The complete calculation, this is the greatest amount of time. He's just giving a definition of the greatest amount of time, and this is Kala Parama, Mahan again. This is the complete calculation of the time of creation, maintenance, and dissolution measured in terms of the circulation of the total planetary systems until the end of creation is known as the Supreme Kala. So the beginning to the end, the supreme time, and everything else is, and that's immeasurable. So everything else is going to start from the smallest to the greatest. The divisions of gross time is calculated as follows. Two atoms make one double atom. So when you take one Paramanu and it combines with a second Paramanu, you get a double Paramanu. Right, and three double Paramanus make one hex atom, 1/6, 3 × 2 = 6. So this hex atom is visible in the sunshine which enters through the holes of a window screen. So it's interesting to note that this Bhagavatam, during the old Vedic times, there were window screens. I guess it was to keep the mosquitoes out and everything the same. And the Sanskrit is jala arka. Jala is net, and arka is the sunshine coming through the net, or coming through a net. So this is very small, not like fish nets or anything like that. A very small mesh. So one can clearly see that the hex atom goes upwards towards the sky. So one atom, Paramanu, is invisible, but when six combine together, it can be seen when sunlight hits it. Okay? So, the first calculation of time is the time duration needed for the integration of three Trisharenas is called a truti. So when two Paramanus combine to make a double atom, and then when the time for the three of those double atoms to combine into a six atoms, this is called a truti. This is the smallest measurement of time. And 100 trutis make a Veda, three Vedas make a Lava, and a Lava is like a little more than half of a second. I think it's mentioned later, it's 5/8 of a second or something like that. So in this way, starting with something in space, how the length of time it takes these atoms to combine, you're getting a small measurement, and then they're doubled and tripled until they build up to the kind of measurements that we are more familiar with. So it goes on like this. A lava and equal several lavas make a namesh. Three nameshes is a chana. Five chanas combined together make a kashta. 15 kashtas make a lagu. And 15 lagus make a nadika, and which is also called a danda. And then there is actually how you can measure a danda of time, which is 30 minutes approximately. This is described, you make a kapha pot of 14 ounces of pot, and then you make a hole in it. And by having the weight of the boring tool and the length fixed, that determines the width of it. If you fix the weight of and the material it's made out of, which is gold, and the length, that determines, that will fix the width of the hole in the copper pot. So the amount of time it takes for that copper pot to fill with water is a danda, which is 30 minutes. So this is a very simple way to calculate 30 minutes. So then it keeps on going up. So the dandas, there are four praharas in a day. So the dandas combine into parahas, and which are the same as yamas, and four in the night of the human being. So those are praharas of 3 hours. So you're coming up to the time of a day and a night, which are 12 hours each in our calculation. Similarly, 15 days and nights are a fortnight, called the paksha. Still, this calculation is used for the phases of the moon. There's the Krishna paksha and the, what's the other one? Shukla, the bright fortnight where the moon is waxing, and the Krishna paksha where it is waning. Right? Is that correct?
Yes.
So then there are fortnights, and fortnights, white and black, Shukla and Krishna, in a month. The aggregate of two fortnights is a month, and that period is one complete night of the Pitta planet. So there are different planetary systems that have different time measurements. So in the higher planetary systems, the time measurements are greater. So in the Pitta planetary systems, 1 month of two fortnights is 1 day and night for the people there. And two of such months comprise a season, because there are six seasons in a year. And 6 months comprise one complete movement of the sun from north to south. This is called the Ayana. So two solar movements, in other words, 1 year in our time, when the sun goes from the north hemisphere to the southern hemisphere, it makes 1 day and night of the demigods. So three different measurements of time have been described so far. One is the solar time, the one that we use in the Earth. Then there's one of the higher planetary systems of the Pittas, and then there's still one that's even greater duration of time, which is the not 1 month in the Pitta planetary system, 1 month equal a day, a night, and in the demigods, the higher, still higher planetary system, 1 year make a day of the demigods. And that combination of day and night is one complete calendar year for the human beings. The human being has a duration of life 100 years. So we're already getting a glimpse of greater lives. The Pittas have a life which is 12 times greater, or 30 times greater or something. And is it 12 or 30? Okay, and then the demigods have one that's still greater, 365 times 100 or something like that. So this is greater. And then there are and influential stars, planets, luminaries, and atoms all over the universe are rotating in their respective orders, orbits, under the direction of the Supreme, represented by eternal color. So then it discusses a little bit the orbits of the sun and the moon and the different and the nakshatras, I think, the different stars and constellations, etc. So this is called the sun's orbit is called the samvatsara. So usually, according to the Western astronomy, the sun is stationary, right? And all the planets orbit around the sun. But actually, something is only stationary in relationship to something else. So when it's calculated in terms of the Earth and the Moon and Venus and Mars and Jupiter, etc., and Saturn, then you can say the sun is stationary. But they cannot say that the sun is not moving, that it doesn't have an orbit in relationship to the entirety of the galaxy and the other planets and the other star system. It's not. It's also moving in space and time. So so now we're getting a sense of time. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains, the subject matters of physics, chemistry, mathematics, astronomy, time and space dealt with in the above verses of Srimad Bhagavatam are certainly very interesting to students of the particular subjects. But as far as we are concerned, we cannot explain them very thoroughly in terms of technical knowledge, Prabhupada says. The subject is summarized by the statement that above all the different branches of knowledge, all these different astronomical branches, above all of them, even the sun's movement, what to speak of our life expectancy of 100 years, and also that of the Pittas, and also that of the demigods, and the orbits of the planet, everything is moving in time and space, and that means that everything is moving by the force of time, the unstoppable, invincible force of time, which is a representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nothing exists without Him, and therefore everything, however wonderful it may appear to our meager knowledge, is but the work of the magical wand of the Supreme Lord. So everything in existence is existing in both space and time. So we've heard about the creations in the last chapter. We heard about the creations in relationship to space. And now we're hearing how everything in space is also moving by time. And both space and time are under the control of Krishna. So what is the effect of time? So we usually measure time by we think of it in terms of seconds, but really, what is we don't really see seconds working, and we don't see minutes, and we don't see hours, Well, what do we see? We see change, yeah, but what we see days. And how do we measure, what planetary body do we measure days by and nights by the sun? So therefore, there is a quotation here, or Maitreya Muni says, O Vidura, the sun enlivens all living entities with its unlimited heat and light. Enliven means it gives life. Because without the sun, we would die so quickly. He diminishes. This is the ultimate effect of the sun in its orbit being pushed by time. He diminishes the duration of life of all living entities. Why? In order to release them from their illusion of material attachment. And he enlarges the path of elevation to the heavenly kingdom. He thus moves in the firmament with great velocity, and therefore everyone should offer him respects once every 5 years with all ingredients of worship. So in the more Karmakandya sections of the Vedic literatures, they will recommend that everyone worship the sun out of appreciation, because the sun is, first of all, the sun is called Surya Narayan. He represents the Lord. And also because the sun is giving us life. So in the Vedic system, there's appreciation and gratitude for everything that we gain things from. And in Kala culture, there is gratitude and appreciation for nothing and no one. So after hearing this, measurements of time, and hearing the conclusion of this, that really the sun and time is meant, its purpose is to diminish our life, which is really to diminish our illusion of attachment. We're attached to things that we cannot hold, so therefore, by definition, we're going to be miserable. If you knew you were going to possess something just for that tenth of a second, would it make any sense to become attached to it? No, because the amount of pleasure that you would get from it would be so flickering, and the misery caused by the attachment would be so great, because you'd always be lamenting your loss of it. So the sun's business in diminishing our life is to diminish our attachments. Now, after hearing this, Madhura says, I now understand the life durations of the residents of the Pitta planets and the heavenly planets, as well as that of the human beings. Now kindly inform me of the duration of life of those greatly learned living entities who are beyond the range of a kalpa. A kalpa is a day of Brahma. Because in a kalpa or a day of Brahma, all the planetary systems, there are three planetary systems, plus there are planets above those three. So the planets above those three do not become destroyed every day of Brahma, while the planets below those three, the upper, middle, and lower planetary system, they are all destroyed every day of Brahma. So we've heard about these three, the lifespans in these three, and now he's asking, now what about the lifespans and more? So our concept of time is going to increase. Right now we think if someone lives to be 100, and if someone lives to be 120, every birthday they're in the newspaper. So that, why? It's because people are thinking, he's so old, she's so old. But now our concept of what's so old is going to increase still further. We've heard about the old age of the demigods, where they live hundreds of times longer than us. 1 year is a day, that means 365 times is longer than us. So 365 times 100. What's that, 36,000 years? So we're thinking that's old. Wouldn't it be great to live 30 times longer, or 100 times longer, 300 times longer? Now listen to this. So So he's asking about, he wants to hear more about the lengths of times. Ovidura, the four millenniums are called the Satya, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali Yugas. The aggregate number of years of all these combined is equal to 12,000 years of the demigods. So that's 4,320,000 years. Combination of all four yugas is also called the Divya Yuga. So then he describes the length of time of each of those different yugas. And also the length, the intermediate times in the conjunction of the yugas, which are called yuga sandhis. So the times in that. So, and then he describes the difference between the different yugas. In Satya Yuga, people are very, very pious, and as the yugas go down to Kali Yuga, people become less and less pious. So there is the day of Brahma, which is 1,000 Divya Yugas, or 1,000 times 4,300,000 years. And then there's a similar period time that for the night of Brahma. So this is one day of Brahma and one night of Brahma. And at the end of Brahma's night, the creation of the three worlds begins in the daytime of Brahma, and at the end of his day, the universe of the three planetary systems is completely destroyed. So a day of Brahma again is 1,000 Divya Yugas, 4,300,000 years times 1,000, and in each day of Brahma there are 14 Manus, who that means their lifespan is 71 and a little bit Divya Yugas. So 71 times 4,300,000 years. So after the dissolution of each and every Manu, the next Manu comes in order along with his descendants who rule over the different planets. But the seven famous sages, the demigods like Indra and their followers such as the Gandharvas, all appear simultaneously with Manu. So if you want to become a demigod, the lifespan that you get is the lifespan of Manu, which is greater than those who live in the demigods and the Pittas and the earth people. But it is not as great as Lord Brahma himself. So in each and every change of Manu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears by manifesting his internal potency in different incarnations. So all the different incarnations come in each day of Manu. And thus, he maintains the universe by his power. At the end of the day, under the insignificant portion of the mode of darkness, the powerful manifestation of the universe merges in the darkness of night. By the influence of eternal time, the innumerable living entities merged in that darkness dissolve, and everything is silent. When the night of Brahma begins, ensues, all the three worlds are out of sight, and the sun and moon are without glare, just as in the course of the ordinary night. Then devastation takes place due to the fire emanating from the mouth of Shankarshan. So this has already been explained earlier in the previous chapter when it described very briefly, or named rather, three different types of destruction. So this is one of them. This one at the end of Brahma's day. And there is all the planetary systems up to Swargaloka or Mahaloka, they start to burn. And then the residents of Mahaloka, they transfer themselves to Janaloka, which is even higher, and which isn't destroyed. So this is what happens. So this is at the end of a day of Brahma, which is indeterminately long. So long. But still, there's going to be destruction. And everyone hates it, because everything that to live in the material world means to get pleasure. And as soon as we get pleasure from something, we get attached to it. And despite the fact that we're attached to it, it's going to be destroyed, and we're going to be destroyed. Even though We think, oh, I'm going to possess a car for 3 years under warranty and it's going to give me pleasure like that, but it's going to be destroyed. And that 3 years is like nothing in time. So at the beginning of the devastation, at the day end of the day of Brahma, the seas overflow, hurricane winds blow up violently, and the waves of the seas become ferocious, and in no time all the three worlds are full of water. The Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, lies down in the water on the seat of Ananta with his eyes closed, and the inhabitants of the Janaloka planet offer their glorious prayers unto the Lord with folded hands. Thus the process of the exhaustion of the duration of life exists for every one of the living beings. Even Brahma undergoes these days and nights when we've had a bad day. We're thinking, boy, I'm glad that day was over. But would we rather have a bad day or death? People prefer, one time I said to someone, just think how bad it is getting old. And the person responded by saying, getting old is good. And what they meant, what she meant was, at least you're not dead. So getting old is preferable. That getting old is preferable to death. Still, we are going to die. So day by day, we are making advancement. We are getting older, and that's our progress. We are progressing towards death. We don't like to think of this. We can't even think about it day by day as we go about our lives. But this is important for devotees to understand, or everyone really to understand, all human beings, so that they reconsider what is truly valuable and what is not valuable in life. So now, talking about Brahma's days, Maitreya says, the 100 years of Brahma's life, this Brahma now, are divided into two parts, the first half and the second half. The first half of the duration of Brahma's life is already over, and the second half is now current. So Brahma is 50, more than 50 at this point. In the beginning of the first half of Brahma's life, there was a millennium called the Brahma Kalpa. Kalpa means the day of Brahma, where Lord Brahma appeared. The birth of the Vedas was simultaneous with the Brahma Kalpa. The millennium which followed the first Brahma millennium is known as the Padma Kalpa. So even Brahma has his days that pass and significant things happen. But yet now, he's over 50. Day by day by day, even Brahma, with his indeterminately long time, is over 50 now. And then in text, after explaining all this in text 38, Maitreya says, the duration of the two parts of Brahma's life, as above mentioned, is calculated to be equal to... Does anyone remember the name of the smallest animation? Yes, yes. Or is it a truti? No, that's the atom, but it's the animation is the amount of time. Or is it a truti? No, a truti. But anyway, after you build up all the trutis into lavas, an animesha is, I think, 5/8 of a second. So the duration of the two parts of Brahma's life, as above mentioned, is calculated to be equal to one animesha, less than a second. So Brahma, who has this huge, incalculably long life, his life is considered not even that. For the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unchanging and unlimited, and is the cause of all causes in the universe. So now, what we've gotten to is the point, the real ultimate point, of eternal time and the eternal Supreme Personality of Godhead. So no matter what position one holds in the material world, even if it's Lord Brahma's position, you could be all powerful in the world, but compared to eternal time, it's not even considered like a second. So what is the use of such a valuable thing? If you had to, if you could possess, if you could become the king, but it could only be for a second, less than a second, what is the use of it? This is the point. What to speak of a lesser position? What to speak of something, enjoyment for lesser time? And Brahma's time compared to our time? It's like a mill and an ant compared to a mountain. So we're getting a hint, an idea of eternal time by this. Eternal time is certainly the controller of different dimensions, from that of the atom to the super divisions of the duration of Brahma's life. So from the beginning, the smallest to the biggest, it is controlled by Krishna in the form of time and is crushing everyone, even Lord Brahma. But nevertheless, it is controlled by the Supreme. Time can control only those who are body conscious, who identify with the body, even up to the Satyaloka or the other higher planets of the universe. This is the point. And then about the universe and space. We've gotten a glimpse of what is big in time, long in time now. And how about space? So we're thinking that I own a lot of land or something like that, or I'm so powerful because I can control a few acres or something like that, or even a country. But this phenomenal material world is expanded to a diameter of 4 billion miles, the universe. So there are unlimited planets we look up at night. And if there's no clouds, we see so many planets. So the totality of those expands 4 billion miles. And it is a combination of 8 material elements transformed into 16 further categories within and without as follows. So then there's the 4 billion mile universe. And then there are layers around the universe. And each one of those layers, consisting of the first one, is the grossest one of the earth. And each one of those is 10 times as big as the one preceding it. So the universe is like a golf ball with a really small, small center. And there's this huge amount of coverings. And there are unlimited universes. Clustered together, they appear like atoms in a huge combination. So here we are thinking we're very, very important. But we're neither important in space, because we're practically, if the universe is like an atom, what to speak of poor Bhurijan Das, who's sitting in a, not even in the smallest speck of the universe, thinking that, as Prabhupada once said, he said, was sitting in his room in Melbourne, meditating, I think, myself, and he had just gotten a letter from someone, and he was a little bit disgusted, and he was saying, he was repeating the mood of the letter, and he said, "Dear Prabhupada, please accept my most fallen, humble, useless obeisances, insignificant obeisances. I have a big problem." So how can someone who's insignificant, useless, fallen, have a big problem? Because someone who is insignificant and useless and can only have an insignificant little problem. But yet, with inside our brains, it's everything is so catastrophically important. But actually, we are so insignificant because even the universe is insignificant. who is not insignificant, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and this is the final verse, Sri Krishna is therefore said to be the original cause of all causes. Thus the spiritual abode of Vishnu is eternal, without a doubt, and it is also the abode of Mahavishnu, the origin of all manifestations. So Krishna is Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadiradi Govinda. So Maitreya Muni is kindly providing us a perspective of the difference between what one gets by becoming a devotee of Krishna, eternal life in Goloka Vrindavan with Krishna, and something, anything else within the material world, located in space and time. Okay, thank you. No time for questions. So next week, we plan to do. I can't remember. What does it say on the sheet? Do you have it? What handy? I think we slow down a bit, going back to Brahma's creation. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Krishna ki jai, Lord Brahma ki jai.